I'm Brandon Isle, and I'm here with Darren Clark. He's a faculty member in the art department, and he has an exhibit called Habitat and Refuge coming into the Sporey Art Gallery. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
I got to take a look at some of your pictures yesterday, and I mean, you just look at each of them, and I just go, wow, how are you able to do that? Can you kind of tell me a little bit what's behind this title, Habitat and Refuge?
I guess the habitat and refuge, there's probably two meanings, I suppose. The literal meaning would be whether the photographs are landscapes that are utilized by birds, and they're also places that bird watchers that are well known in the bird watching community. I myself am a pretty passionate bird watcher, and so this exhibit kind of combines those two passions of bird watching and photography and landscape photography. So habitat and refuge. So habitat and refuge for the birds, but also these places are a habitat for bird watchers or places that bird watchers go. And personally, a refuge, I think, for myself, I go to these places to look at the birds and to kind of renew myself. And so these places are also kind of a place of refuge for myself and for others. So
bird watching is so fascinating to me.
Is it?
there are so many different birds in Idaho, and I think most Idahoans don't realize the variety we have. I mean, we see the birds that we see, robins in our backyard and things like that, but there's so much more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the same. I grew up in Idaho, and I was interested in nature. I was interested in snakes and frogs, really, but there's not a lot of snakes and frog species in Idaho, so I would be a little frustrated. And when I went to Ricks College, I took a field biology class from Ryrie Godfrey, who no longer teaches here. But the big push in that class was birds, and so that kind of opened my eyes that I had no idea there were. I mean, I like you, robins, starlings, ducks, that's what I thought we had. I thought all the good birds were other places, like maybe Florida or Africa or something. But as I started to look around, there are literally hundreds of species in Idaho. I myself have identified 380 plus species in Idaho. And I know I'm nerding out a little bit, but
that's okay.
You can bird watch anywhere you live, and it's something you can do any time of the year, any place you live. And I think that's what makes it kind of appealing to a lot of people.
Now, in the exhibit, there's a wall with just close-up shots of birds.
Yeah.
And I know it's grouped in birds of Idaho and then birds from elsewhere.
Birds of North America,
essentially. North America. Yeah. Do you have a favorite bird that you've been able to capture?
I don't. I like to photograph any bird that will let me photograph it. I've got photographs of pigeons and house sparrows and starlings in that exhibit. But there are some more exotic or more kind of special birds in that. I mean, I like to photograph owls because they tend to let you get...
There's several owls.
Yeah, there's several owl species, hawks. But I like sparrows and warblers, and I just like the variety of birds, and so I have a hard time picking a favorite.
And I know some of the shots actually come from on campus. Is that right?
There's probably 4 or 5 photographs that were taken on campus. In fact, as I was walking from the Sporey to this building today, I found, starlings and robins and cedar waxwings and bohemian waxwings feeding in the trees. And so I've seen that from my office, and I'll go down with the camera and photograph those. This time of year, those waxwings will get in the trees. And I think there are at least there's probably 3 photographs from on campus in that exhibit.
Yeah, those cedar waxwings, I think they're just so pretty. They're just a vibrant color, and they're right here. The first time I saw one, I looked at it and went, why is this in Idaho?
Yeah, they're pretty spectacular and relatively common, but a lot of times they're very high in the trees, or they're kind of just flying. But in the winter, they feed on those kind of ripening crab apples and other berries, and you can get pretty close to them.
So. Yeah. Now, when you're out in the field taking pictures, is there a lot of downtime, a lot of wait time to get just that right shot?
So if we're talking about the landscape photographs, which really the exhibit is probably, there are bird photographs in it, but it's probably more about the land and the place. And so for those photographs, I like to photograph. If you go, you'll see that most of the photographs are taken really lovely light, early morning, late sunrise, sunset type.
Yeah, that was, I noticed that right away, that it was not the bright of the midday. Yeah.
Although there are a couple, but most of them are in that really lovely time of day, which a lot of photographers like. And so, yeah, especially in the summer, there was a lot of downtime. I'm photographing sunrise at 4 in the morning and wow. photographing until 9, 10 o'clock at night. But in order to, a lot of these places are places I had never been before. So I would arrive and spend the ugly part of the day kind of scouting out locations and bird watching and photographing birds. And then kind of planning my time, which direction is the sun going to be at sunrise or sunset? And then planning to come back at those times. So even though there were a lot of times I wasn't photographing when I'd visit these places, I did spend a lot of time scouting and figuring out the places so that I could take advantage of good light.
What are some of these places you went to? I hope they're not secret.
No, they're not. They're not secret. I would like for a lot of people to visit these places, and they're fairly well known in the weird subculture of bird watching. But I mean, they go from Nia Bay, which is in the extreme northwestern corner of Washington in the United States, all the way down to San Diego, the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, outside of Key West, Florida, the Dry Tortugas, all the way up to Maine. So really the four corners of, the five or whatever you want to call, but
right.
but really the boundaries of the United States, and then several spots in between Michigan, Pennsylvania, a few in Idaho and Utah, and plan to continue this project probably for a long time, but I had enough to put together an exhibit.
Yeah. I know there. One of my favorite shots is one where there's this fog that is just kind of settled in, and I mean, just the light that comes in and just the landscape of that. How do you capture a moment like that?
Well, I think the one you're talking about is in Alabama. It was a live oak tree in Dauphin Island, Alabama. And what you do is you get really, really lucky. So if you arrive and there's fog, for me anyway, and probably a lot of photographers, that allows you to take advantage of that. And almost all, in that case, I could photograph all day because that light was really lovely. And so I don't know what I did to capture that other than respond and be prepared and kind of understand exposure. But if you photograph for a long time, you don't think about how you do this. You just react and do it. So probably luck in that case.
Yeah.
But you'll never get lucky if you're not out there looking.
Right. So. You've got to have a camera. You've got to be out there. What kind of gear do you use when you go out?
If you notice, these landscapes are pretty big. Some of them are 27 by 60 inches. There's one that's 36 by 48 inches, and some are a little smaller. But a lot of them are panorama kind of format. And so I don't use anything remarkable as far as camera gear. I use a Canon full frame SLR. It's a 5D Mark 3 and 4. But I'm also using what's called the tilt shift lens, and that tilt shift lens allows you to shift the lens all the way over to the left and take a photograph, and then shift it all the way to the right without moving the camera. And so you take two or three photographs, And then you can stitch those together in a real flat, seamless way and get twice the resolution that you could from a single file. Or sometimes I'll turn the camera vertically and do three left to right, and you have almost three times the resolution you do in a single file. So that allows you to print pretty large. But they're all digital files printed on an inkjet printer.
Yeah. I know one of them is looking out like over a bay or something, and they're just birds coming up. And you have to look kind of close, but just hundreds of birds.
Yeah, that's in the Dry Tortugas in Florida. There's a nesting colony of sooty terns out there. Really the only nesting colony in the United States of sooty terns and brown noddies. And yeah, when you go out there, they're literally just swarming, probably, I think, tens of thousands of terns flying around. And yeah, when I first looked at that photograph, I thought I just had a bunch of dust on my sensor.
Right, because it was kind of dirty. Far away.
Yeah, but then as you print it large and look, you'll actually realize that there are, in that photograph, probably hundreds of birds flying around in the air.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's pretty neat. As people go to your exhibit, what do you hope they get from it?
I hope they realize that this is a great place, this planet that we live on, and that there are remarkable things to see. And I don't care if they're bird watchers. I don't know if the exhibit is for bird watchers, and I'm not even trying to convert people to bird watching with the exhibit, But I think just realizing that anything you're passionate about is worth paying attention to, whether it's golf or fly fishing or fixing cars or whatever it is, but that there are stories to be told. And so the story I'm telling is one of many stories that could be told about bird watching. But it's also just realizing that places are beautiful, places are interesting, and if you will slow down and look at them, whether you're a photographer or not, but if you'll still slow down and look at them, you'll realize the value of a place. And I think also the importance of having places that you can go to maybe escape's not the right word, but to kind of feel more connected with yourself or with the environment. But as I mentioned, refuge, these places have just been so important to me, and they're important to a lot of people, just to help them kind of escape the day-to-day drudgery, and not that this job is drudgery, but the pressures of life can get to you, and sometimes it's nice to find things to distract yourself from that.
Yeah, it's a good break.
Yeah.
And that connection you talked about. Darren Clark is having an exhibit called Habitat and Refuge. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.